This is Ingrid Kincaid, and week four of the the teachings of the Norse Spirit Wheel. It's November 28th, 2017, and we're discussing the East. We're moving into the East. So, one of the things that I made note of here is that the ancients, the ancestors, really had to pay attention to the cycles and the seasons of life, of nature and the weather. And that it was a matter of life and death. It truly was. I mean, there was no way, there was nothing to fall back on. There was no magic pill to take or jet plane with a pineapple in February, you know, all the things that we are used to. Their lives depended upon knowing what time it was, knowing where the moon was, knowing whether it was going to be a hard winter or a late spring, paying attention to the signs and the signals. One of the things that I have come to appreciate in working with this information is that we're not any different. And maybe if we remove ourselves from the immediacy of understanding the seasons, because we do have the luxury of heated homes and grocery stores and all that. Mm-hmm. However, the principles of cycles of life, cycles of relationships, cycles of growth, cycles of life change, are also matters of life and death for us, and maybe not as literal, but most certainly on the level of the spiritual, and the levels also of where it is that we allow ourselves to die, wither away, stay too long, not allow ourselves enough time to process something, gas the cantaloupes, you know, so that they're ripe but don't taste like anything. That kind of a concept of where we, if we take these principles and apply them in our daily lives and use the wisdom that's there and ask the questions about situations, circumstances, decisions, choices, this information serves us, can serve you, will serve you in the same way that it did our ancestors in the literal aspect of knowing how to live. And that's one of the things that came really strongly for me as I reviewed the notes for tonight about the East. It's the place of return in an interesting way, because we don't talk about the dark returning. It's not so much in our language, even though we could technically say the dark returns in the West. But we more commonly would speak about the light returning or the sun returning. And it's also the place of emerging, the place where things come forth, where something comes out. And so in that, there are also decisions and choices that have to be made at the time of the emerging. And remembering as we go back around the circle the other way is that the things that we decide, what we decided to do in the West about what was harvested, what had come full circle of growth, how we used that, whether we ate it all or stored some of it or left it in the field, determines what we have to work with in the spring. And some of that we came to really understand in the winter. We really appreciated. So the directions don't work separate from each other. And that's also why it doesn't matter where you are on the wheel. You always step back into the center, and you can begin wherever it feels like you need to begin, because you can ask the question using the little prompt words, is something emerging in my life? Is something coming forth or appearing? Is something returning? Is this something that's come again? Is this a place where something's dying? Is this a place, and when we get to the South, we'll talk about the ripening and the patience that it takes to allow something to grow to maturity, which is about deeply rooting and growing, you know, above and growing below. So you always go back to center and then ask, where am I? What's happening around me? What's being asked of me? And then from that place you can know which way to turn, stepping into a direction that has the information for you. And as you become more and more familiar with it, I find very often that there's great value in taking the problem, the question, the circumstance into each one of the directions. And asking a question, you know, what's emerging, what's disappearing, what's ripening, what's demanding a sacrifice or an initiation. And so it's harder to understand that until you've completed the whole circle. However, you can understand the principle of it. So to check in, we spent the time last week in the north. That was a choice, you know, to call that direction north, a place of dark, place of stillness, place of cold, place of sacrifice and initiation, and to enter into something new, you had to be willing to offer something up. So what happened for you this week in relationship to the north or in relationship to the wheel? Or anything? related to the rooms. I don't have enough space to listen to anybody else's problems.
We had a really rough week, and wind was the one that we talked about last week, too, and that was kind of my theme. My father became very ill, and he's in the hospital, and when I had to go tell somebody, it was like, even though I felt it in my gut, in my heart, in my mind, it wasn't real until I put that wind behind it. And that also happened last night when my father-in-law passed away. I went to the hospital to see my dad, and my stepmom came in, and I had to tell her, and that's, again, as I'm telling her, I'm thinking, I'm putting wind behind this and making it real.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Well, glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
Do you need a box of tissue?
No, I'm okay at the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So you had to speak that into existence.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Let us know if there's a way, anything that we can hold place for you. Or
okay, well, thank you for that, but I'm okay at the moment.
All right.
I guess for me, I have been working still with the center primarily, and really just trying to develop that practice of going back and holding the center and claiming that space, and just try to bring it more into my everyday, you know, or if I know I'm going to get into a kind of sticky situation at work, or if I have to leave a meeting, really try to find some time to really get into my center and my authentic self and ground and really get that grounding. And, you know, I love how you brought up last week even that, and you brought up the first week with the roots, that we're not sending roots down, that we already have them, and just really trying to think about that too a lot, and just really having that connection so that I can just access it whenever I need it, to develop that familiarity, so when the stakes are higher, I mean, those situations that would throw me off guard, I can become more prepared.
Thank you.
I'm pregnant.
Congratulations. That adds a nice touch to the discussion.
There's all the feelings. So I'll move that aside. And I think in relationship to the teaching around the wind, it's like I just sort of started to feel like I was like myself again. And so I'm going to have to backtrack a bit to prepare for this, like, new life. And there's a sacrifice in that. There's a big sacrifice in that. Because we were planning to have one kiddo. And yet, it's, you know, it's beautiful. And my daughter is 3 and she loves babies. Like, loves. I mean, it's innate. It was never, you know, I was really careful not to, like, hand her, you know, gender-specific toys just because I wanted her to be, to be authentic. And so it's very authentic for her to so she's just gonna, from what we've seen, she will be, when we tell her, she'll be elated. And, you know, but it's just a whole nother stepping back into center, you know, and then I'm also seeing it as, like, an opportunity to go deeper into myself, to come out on the other side. Does it make sense? Because, like, I'm seeing, like, the first child only, like, you know, makes so much room, and then I'm thinking that probably the second will make, you know, a bigger, I don't know, there's more chance for growth, and I don't know. I'm a little shell-shocked.
How did this happen?
Right. We thought we were, I don't know, whatever. But, like, we're in it, you know, like, my husband got laid off, and yeah, it's like, we're like, whoa, you know, so it's all going to be okay. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, thank you for bringing that into the East.
Yeah, it is, actually.
In the East.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not much to say after that.
Well, that's just what's true. That's what's happening. That's what's true.
Life goes on.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I had planned to go to the beach for the holiday weekend, and it didn't work out. So, my boyfriend has been very sick, so we just did a stay at home and be cozy, and I start going, you know, trying to go through boxes of all my old stuff. So that was kind of my weekend.
So. Mm-hmm. Maybe place for a new beginning too. Well, and we move something out of the way. There's space for something else. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was kind of mine. I had all kinds of invitations to go places for Thanksgiving. And I told them all no. I've not had Thanksgiving at my house since, or cooked a Thanksgiving dinner since 2008. And that was before my husband really got really ill and then passed in 2010. He says, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to do something here for me. Because it's time to bring back that which is mine. So I stayed home and cooked a dinner. It didn't turn out very good because my heart wasn't in it, but I cooked it. and then, too, I've been sorting through things and just, you know, you only need how many stocking caps and pairs of gloves? So I've just been getting rid of. And, too, I was in corporate America. I had 9 wool suits. I have 2 now. I gave the rest of them away. It's just I'm not going to do that anymore. So it's like just paring everything down, getting rid of, and reclaiming that which I like.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We talk a lot about belongings and possessions and things in when we have the week about the Feyu room.
Right.
You'll see I wrote some of that in the book about Feyu and storage units and stuff filled with, you know,
well,
stuff.
Just,
and
it's just not...
It doesn't serve us.
And there's so much dust. The other thing was I've been getting rid of things that collect dust. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, how many statues do you really need? One goddess is fine. She can represent everybody.
Yeah, I just say it's the ancestors came to visit. My dust is. That's my ancestors.
Well, that's a good one. I have to remember that. Well, and I say when the spiders are around, it's just the Norns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've come to visit.
I love the spiders.
So I do too. Yeah.
So I've been getting rid of stuff as well. And also I had a load of a big box of my daughter's letters from 1997 when she was in Australia. They're her letters from France. And some of my letters were in there. And she just said, toss them. But I was reading some of the things I wrote to her and some of the things my mother wrote to her, who is now dead. And it was, I don't remember me 20 years ago. That was really strange. And one of my mother's letters was a card she hadn't opened. And maybe I shouldn't have, but I opened it because she told me just to throw the stuff out. So I felt entitled.
You found it in the trash.
And there was a £50 note in there.
Well, lovely. Can you still do something with it?
Well, I felt I
had to give it to her.
I'm going to give it to her, but it just kind of gave me the notion about, you know, don't leave things unopened.
That is why I'm going through my stuff very slowly, because I'm looking at all of that.
And you have to. You never know what you threw in the bottom of a box.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was, I never know. This was all in Australia, so I was thinking of the North, but during the time that I was in this big box, I was in the South as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, lots of stuff happening, huh? Mm-hmm. I have to empty my mouth. I can't talk. One thing I'm going to ask of you next week, in our last class, is to give me some ideas about what you would call this class. Because I'm in the process of putting this into the book form. And I have taught this for so many years now. And every time I change the name, because something hasn't quite settled. And mostly I call it the Norse Wheel, the Norse Spirit Wheel. But I want to put that out, that you can kind of be playing around with that idea. Mm-hmm. Help me name my book. We'll have a contest here. Mm-hmm. So, what are we going to talk about first? Been backing up again to what I had said about what decisions we make in the West affect what we have to plant or to emerge in the East. And I made the note that if we consumed all of the grain, let's say, or all of the seeds, there wouldn't be anything left to plant. And that to me is also part of the teaching of the cycle, is that we must pay attention to putting things back, not always taking. And on a literal level, all you have to do is drive through like Great Central Valley of California, where they have farmed it to death and the soil is dead. You know, the soil is actually gray, it's lifeless, there's no nothing in there that makes it grow, because they take and take and take, and then they artificially fertilize it and force food to grow from soil that has died. Mm-hmm. and that this is also what happens in our lives. That we give and give, or take and take, and we don't practice good self-care. We don't have, you know, we don't feed ourselves right. We don't rest enough. We don't put ourselves as a priority. We're not able to be selfish for ourselves, and to the point that we then don't have a self anymore. And so part of this, of how do you have something coming back each spring if you don't put something into yourself? So that's a part of the teaching of the East that can be really brought home when you reach that point where you've squeezed the sponge dry and you don't have anything left to give. And then there's a bitterness and a resentfulness and a desiccation and a dry, you know, we become dry. We're not juicy and moist and vibrant and alive because we've forgotten the principle of the wheel that we have to put back into the soil. We have to feed. So I'm going to start then with Berkana rune. The Berkana rune looks like the letter B, but everything with the runes is pointy. It does look like the letter B by coincidence, mm-hmm. not that those sounds were. Mm-hmm. That's Berkana. Berkana, if you read, you know, Rune Book 101, will say it's the rune of the mother. Excuse me. All of my recordings have me coughing. It's the rune of the mother. And so then you go down the road, you know, the mother is the nurturer and the feeder and the birther and all the blessed, lovely things that we, you know, all the stuff that we, the lies we get told and sold to make us behave and to always be giving. And that's the way that the culture, society, politics, whatever, views the earth. That we can just always take from the earth, no respect, not give back, just use and abuse. And that we, I have a poem I wrote called The Hag, where I say that she represents all the deaths from overbreeding, you know, and that's really what happens is that, you know, we've been overbred. And so if you read some of the rune books that are very male-focused, male-dominant, Odin, you know, filtered, you'll read this thing about Berkana always being the giving mother, birthing mother. In my poem, I start out by saying, beware the devouring mother. Mm-hmm. Because she who gives birth also has the wisdom to know when to eat her young. She who gives birth knows when to kill something in the litter. If she can only feed one, she will kill the other one. If there's something wrong, she puts it out of the nest. There's this balance that exists in nature that we don't like to talk about because we're fed this idea of, you know, we have to nurture. I'm not talking. I know you just...
It's okay.
Some of us would like to have eaten our children, right? But this is the wisdom that has to be presented when you talk about Berkana and when you talk about the East, is that not everything that is brought forth, not everything that is given birth to, not everything that sprouts or, you know, emerges from the egg or whatever is viable. And if we're not allowed to exercise the wisdom of Berkana, the wisdom of the mother, in making decisions of when to end something, when to not put energy into it, when to use that discernment that we talked about in the West, when to know how much we can give to what, not to everything. And that is also part of the constant return, because what happens, I mean, you know this from breeding livestock, if you continue to perpetuate a weakness, or you create something that is a monoculture or a monobreed, then we begin to see in, well, you, let's say dogs, where you breed a certain breed and then the genetically the weakness is there over and over again. And that happens in nature. There's a natural selection that happens in nature that is about the truth, a principle that is true, that nature or life thrives on diversity. And the diversity when we perpetuate doing this monoculture, monocrops, all of that, we weaken things. But we also weaken the stock when we don't allow nature to come in and eat its young. And that's just as loving and just as valuable and just as much a part of Berkana as the birthing is. And it's not a shadow side, and it's not a negative aspect. It is the wholeness of what is going to come forth.
Yeah. I think a lot of the spirituality going around right now doesn't want the diversity.
Mm-mm.
We all have to be one, heaven forbid that anyone is different.
Well, and that there's no place for understanding that not everything that comes forth is something that we must take care of. That there's a wisdom in understanding that, let's say a business venture, a company that you conceived of, or even a relationship that you put a lot of energy and work into, it comes to a place where you have to decide if it's going to be viable or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we have expressions like that in you know, the beating the dead horse kind of thing. Don't beat.
You can't pour from an empty vessel.
Exactly, but we forget that because we've been conditioned to always, at any length, you know, at all costs, take care of something. Well, there's also a part in the teaching of the East. Is that sometimes, you know, newly sprouted things need to be protected, gently watered, maybe shaded, maybe staked. We can put all the energy into something. We can be very careful. We can be very attentive. And it may still die because it may not be appropriate. It may not be in the right place. It may not be the right time. It may have been a seed that had a defect, then it just doesn't grow properly. And there's also wisdom and understanding that this is the teaching also of the Norns, is that we are weaving our lives into a pattern. You know, we're responsible for taking care of something and doing our best at it, but we are weaving into a pattern that's already there. So there are things that are not within our control, nor should we even imagine that they could be, and they're certainly not our fault. You know, this is another thing where you create your own reality, and this is showing up in your life because. So I think we've all heard that kind of language, and there's a balance for both of it, but not when we get off in the direction that somehow there must be something wrong, and that's that ideology of some spiritualities, that things are happening because you're imperfect or you're sinful or you didn't follow the rules or whatever. And the bigger truth is that we're very insignificant in the eyes of life as a wholeness, and that we're not in control of everything. And we don't, you know, things aren't just happening because of us, because we don't exist, you know, isolated in time or place. We were birthed into something that's already there. So yes, we can change things by how we weave, what we spin and how we weave, but we cannot change the threads of the loom that were placed on the loom before we did the weaving. And that's also, I think, part of the teaching of the East, is that there's that, no matter what emerges, it emerges in our presence and we participate with it, but we were not the only being, the only energy that was part of what came forth.
Yeah.
So that's Birkana. The other part of the East to me is about creativity. And I've spent many years facilitating classes around the creative process and reconnecting with your own creative energy, which is your spiritual energy, which is your sexual energy. All this is all woven together in this magical, amazing way. And that creativity emerges. You know, when this would go back to some of the things we talked about in the, you know, the future and the past, that and then what's in the present moment. Is it possible that the thing that we, as we create, the thing that we are envisioning already existed someplace else? And there's a lot of writing around that concept that this, because when we create, we bring something into form, that we bring it into a form that didn't already exist. However, did this, the essence of that thing exist someplace else? And if it did, does, just like the essence of a word, we maybe have the concept in our mind, but we use the wind to speak what we're thinking into existence, and it takes form. So creativity possibly is also part of this great animistic ideology, and out of the place where it existed, it comes and visits many of us, just like the ancestors do, and say, will you do this job, will you take on this commission, will you write this book, will you teach this class? And creativity does that, I believe, because we find very often that several people will have the same creative idea, and that one of them will act upon it, and somebody else will say, well, you know, that was my idea, or that came to me, and it's like, well, I'm going to come to you and ask, and you don't say, oh, okay, that's interesting, but I'm too busy, or I can't, so it goes to you, and you bring it forth, because it was ready to be born. Was ready to be brought into form. So it emerges in the sense that it's a new life. Mm-hmm. And in that way, when we create, we foretell the future, because we are bringing forth something that didn't exist, and it actually existed there. Like we walked into the horizon and we caught it, and it appeared. And that's the same thing with the appearance in the East, is that we are foretelling the future, or perhaps we are remembering the future, because if it already existed, do we remember that it's there, and we speak it into existence or create it into existence. This is, you know, I'm playing with concepts and ideas that are maybe not so easily to get hold of, but I believe it's worth exploring with the runes.
There's in the book Eat, Pray, Love. Oh, I would say those. Yeah. At the end, she talks about the acorn and the oak tree. And that we always think the acorn grows into the oak tree, but was the oak tree there and called the acorn to grow into it? And so that's what I'm getting when you're saying that. That's coming back to me.
And that same author in her TED Talk, I don't know if you saw that, said that she started to write a book, and then for some reason it wasn't published, she didn't finish it. And then somebody she knew wrote the same story.
Whoa.
So, yeah,
creativity pinging.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I really believe that, and I believe
I heard that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's exciting in its own way, because it also then would invite each of us to take action on things, to not wait or to not put it off or to because this is not just about creativity, but is the creativity tied together or woven together with the ancestors? Because they hold the memory, and what we're, you know, what we're bringing forth might look new, but it maybe really isn't, because it's based of everything that we make, we think of, we have to have thought of it, and it doesn't exist just in our mind until we give form, because that's the maker part, that's the artifact, the manufacture, the creativity is that we give form to something. And even if it's a, you know, a word, a one-word poem, it still is alive because that word formed something.
Even like they say about in like when like calculus was being developed, I don't know how many hundreds of years ago or 100 years ago, it was two different people across Europe that both developed it at the same time, like independent of each other.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the same thing. It's these kind of things happen in waves, mm-hmm. yeah. when we're ready for it, mm-hmm. start coming to the surface.
Yeah.
Tesla and Edison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I believe that's part of the East.
Yeah.
And then that the rune that also we could work with, that to me is a part of the creativity aspect, is a rune that looks... It's written some in two different ways, so you might see it with the the horizontal bar, it either with just the line floating, or with the horizontal bar and the line touching it. And it's a rune called Yir, Y-R. And it's the rune of the bow and arrow, or the concept of the bow, and the bow is not of any value if it doesn't have an arrow. And it's an artifact. It's something that is made, just like a drum. And so there's the wood, there's the string, whatever that's made out of, maybe the sinew. There's the wood of the arrow. There's the tip of the arrow, usually a stone, piece of metal. There's the feathers on the arrow, how it's tied together. All of these pieces of things come together and are formed into something that is a tool, that is a weapon, that is a creation, and it becomes itself, just like the drums. There's the drum hoop and the animal that offered its life up so that we could have its skin, and then there may be a different wood and a different skin on the beater. And so you have the spirit of the tree and the spirit of the animal and the spirit of the drum maker and the spirit of the person playing the drum, and you have the drum, because the drum becomes alive. It is a being, and they like to be made love to and like to be talked to and like to be used. And so that's also the same with the bow and arrow, and that this to me is East is also about the creative place of how we bring something into form, and then is it a tool? You know, do we have a relationship with it? Do we abuse it? Do we take it for granted? Do we take care of it? How do we take care of the things that we bring into form? So we have someone who is knitting. Now, if you knit yourself a pair of socks,
mm-hmm.
my sense as a knitter is that me, as well as anyone else who knits or gets knitted socks, takes care of them differently than a pair of cheap socks that you buy at Fred Meyer. True?
Mm-hmm.
I still have an old-fashioned darning egg, a wooden darning egg that's a needle holder. The top turns and you put the needles into it, and then it's a needle case, but it's a darning egg. And you take care of what you have brought into form in a different way, because it has meaning to you. It literally came, it emerged from your hands, which is an amazing, amazing concept. Just like yarn, when you watch somebody spinning, it's like, here's something coming from, this is the raw stuff, and then out of that comes this thread that then becomes something. And so to me also, the East is about working with things, remembering return and emerging all at the same time, and then how do we relate to what we bring forth? And there's that place where if you were trying to knit a pair of socks and you had wool that was filled with, that had been moth-eaten, let's say you had a skein of yarn that had, the moths had gotten into it, and every couple of stitches the whole thing shredded and frayed, it would be useless to continue to work in that way with that particular ball of yarn, because every time you get to a place you have a hole, and you're not going to want to tie a bunch of knots, because that's not going to be comfortable in a sock. So you have to make a decision about what you're going to do with that. Mm-hmm. Are you going to try and re-spin it? Are you going to use it perhaps for something else? Will you stuff a child's animal with that wool that's been eaten by the moths that can't be used to knit a sock? And that's also then, that's the discernment from the West, but you bring it into the East and you say, I can't create from this, even though that was my intention, and even though that's what I want to do, because the substance I have isn't working. And so, does that mean all of a sudden you're never going to make another sock? Right? Or you're going, that must, it's a sign. Must mean that it wasn't meant to be. And off we go, right in that direction. Or you just keep working with it. Ignore, it doesn't matter that that the yarn is all falling apart and I'm just knitting socks with holes. We wouldn't do that. So that then is the wisdom of the Berkana coming back and the aspect of the Yirun. Me and popcorn and talking are not good combinations.
Can I interject something? Yes. Which is not, I mean, it's only really relational to me, but you're talking about darning socks, and I had this memory of when I was 11 and in my school we had coal fires, and so when it was snowy we would put all our socks around the fire, and my headmistress commented on how beautiful my mother's darning was. I just kind of,
isn't
the 50-pound note and the darn socks. She's kind of around, I think.
Sweet. Because darning was also an art.
Oh, yes.
To be able to darn something and then you would reuse it. And and then there's that question of if it's been, you know, is it the same sock if you've darned it so many times? Mm-hmm. With other yarn and other threads, and you're still wearing the sock, but is it really the original sock? No, because it's a living thing, isn't it? That it's been recreated and reshaped. It's still the same sock, but it really isn't the same sock. And that's also that continuous cycle. This to me is like the exciting part of the East. And these, you know, the whole concept of the Norns and the Norns, the spinning, weaving beings that were at the beginning of creation, or this particular creation story, that's all about coming back into connection with handwork. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that that's a piece that, you know, we've talked about in other classes, is that we miss that. We're not makers anymore. We don't make. And that doesn't mean we have to go back and start sewing our own clothing. However, the principle is missing. And there's something happens for us when we work with our hands and create, and we have different relationship.
Well, and I think, too, it's that creation for yourself. If you're sewing your own clothes, or you're crocheting your socks, or knitting your socks, or crocheting something, there is a certain amount, I know when I do, there's a certain amount of energy, of my own energy, that I put in, if it's a gift for someone. But if it's for me, too, I'm putting some thought, some really energy into the piece.
Right. Yeah.
Which, yeah, you can't go to the store and, well, you shop forever, but
right.
You still.
Right. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. So we have Berkana and we have Yir, And then we have, we go back to the two runes that I talked about in the center, the Eivaz, which is the rune that is the vertical line with the little thing pointing up and the little thing pointing down. That was the Eivaz, and we talked about it having a pivot in the middle. And it's the rune of the yew tree and the rune of the roots and the branches, and that what's up is the same as what's down and vice versa. So it's a great rune. This is a rune that you can take into the East. Actually, this rune works, it's one of the runes that works really, really easily in all five directions because it's easy to make sense of it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, what was there hidden had disappeared, the rune spun, and now that's up at the top and this is down at the bottom, and that constant moving, which we'll start talking about the return of the sun in a minute. But this rune is easy because it's the turning from the dark into the light, turning from the light into the dark, turning into cold, from the cold into the warmth into the cold. The other rune that also works well easily and fits in all five directions is the rune that looks like the little bow tie that's called Dagaz. And like I said, this is not a class about the runes, but you have to have a little understanding of the runes as they apply to the wheel. You can get a taste of how, once you begin to know all the runes, you can work with the wheel, for instance, and take each rune and take it each of the five directions. That might be an exercise that you would want to do. I'd like to take 33 runes and say for a period of a month, and each day I would take a rune and I would spend a little bit of time with that rune in each one of the five directions and ask, how does this relate? How does this connect? So Dagaz is the rune of transformation, the rune of, you know, like I say, in the middle is the equinox, the equal night, equal day, and then the two side pieces are the solstices. So you could easily work with that, of the longest night, the longest day, and then in the, you know, these places where we're, it's probably, I hope it's somebody upstairs, where there's a constant movement. Because the place of the East is where we really see the movement from the darkness becoming the light, and the emerging of the sun, the returning of the sun. So it's a place of emerging, but it's also a place of return. So life emerges. The chickens, the fowl, the snakes, the turtles, they come out of an egg. And the egg came out of the body of the female. I don't know if there's any males that lay eggs, or maybe there's some that are both, but in general. The seed comes, the sprout comes out of the seed, the grain, the acorn, the pine nut, and the mammals, they come out of the body of the mother. So things emerge. The sun emerges from the water or from the land or the mountain. Forget the science and the mathematics and all the descriptions that we have, because that has taken away from us the mystery, and has taken away from us the magic, and taken away the moment of your personal experience. What are you watching right now? What's happening? The sun is actually coming up out of the water. I was born on the West Coast. I lived for 6 years in Connecticut, and that was really interesting for me. Mm-hmm. To experience sunrise instead of sunset, that to actually have the sun come up out of the water. And it's different. Sunrise is different than sunset because there's this, you know, you just see the glow, 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 and then all when it appears, it's just amazing. It's the amazing experience of this thing, this immense, glowing, blinding light that comes up out of the ground. The Norse tradition also has a creation story about emerging, but Christianity doesn't. Judaism doesn't. Their story isn't about emerging because life doesn't come out of the mother in the way they tell it, but it really does because in the story it said, and that the God made man out of the dust of the ground.
Which is
the earth. Which so even it's still there's like a little hint there. But what we know when we observe life and when we watch life is that life comes out, and it comes out of the body of the mother. Whether it's the mother or whether the sun comes up out of the earth, out of the water, it doesn't matter. Whether the chicken is coming out of the egg, we see emerging. So that then takes me in the East to the story of the cow, Audhumla. And again, this is a story that's been bastardized, as far as I'm concerned, because they turned it into the story of a bovine. It's a bovine, and she's there for a moment, then she disappears, and she's not important, and she's not you never heard of again. If you back that story up, and really put yourself in the north and know that the reindeer were all the way down to the Alps, you know, down to in France, in Italy, that when there was ice and cold, and that they literally emerge out of blizzards. When you are living with the reindeer and it's snowing and it's so white and you can't see anything, the reindeer that's their realm. They thrive in it. And so you could be caught in a blizzard and not know your way and literally have a reindeer cow come out of the appear in front of you because she comes out of the chaos of the blizzard. So in all likelihood, again, you know, this is not how it's written, but I do believe that the story of the emerging of the cow is the coming out of the chaos when fire and ice came together as the emerging of a reindeer cow. And that she was pregnant. And she gave birth. And we know that she did because the being called Ymir survived because the story says he was suckling her. So she had to have just given birth or she wouldn't have had milk. And she is called a cow. And she emerged from the chaos. She came forth from this cosmic void of steam, fire, and ice. She emerged, she gave birth, and she licked ice. Because that also says that's what she did. And when she gave birth, the calf drops out. It's in the birthing sac, and it immediately freezes because it's still that cold. And so that sac froze. And she licked her baby out. And she nursed, that was one of them. She gave birth to twins, if you look at that. Mm-hmm. It's a very different way to look at that story. And so you go back and say, well, what happened to the cow? Well, it's the same thing as what happened to anything. Where's the emerging part? Where's the birthing part? Where's the berkana in these old stories that were written, that were gathered together and then written down, translated by a Catholic monk who probably never saw a vagina. So he never saw the baby coming out. Right? I don't know about you ladies, but that's... I won't name any names, but I had a conversation. I have a necklace hanging on the altar there that if you look at it, it's some vertebrae put together, And it's just like a little clitoris. Take it down, if you will. It's three vertebrae put together. And when Stephanie made it, she intentionally did it that way.
This one here?
Yeah, the bone one there. You can pull it off. So if you look at the front of it, doesn't that look like a little clit?
Oh, it does.
Uh-huh.
It does. Oh,
yeah. So I was wearing it at a ritual, and this lovely gay man commented on the necklace. And I said, with you know, it's like, isn't this amazing? It's like a little clitoris that she made. Mm-hmm. And he just was really like that. And he said, well, I wouldn't know. I never seen one. I mean, that's what he said to me. And so I said,
oh, wow.
Yeah, this. There she is.
Oh, dear.
I said, yes, you did. And he was like, I said, on your way out, when you were born. And there was one there. And he says, I had my eyes closed. He did not want to even think about the possibility that he emerged past the clitoris. So, it was classic. It was so sweet because he was shy about the whole thing, but he goes, no, I had my eyes closed. So this is also a piece that I feel is really female. This is feminine part of the runic wisdom. That's also the birthing part that is present in the essence of the East. That we must remember that life emerges and that it comes out of the dark or out of the soil or out of the egg or out of the body of the woman. And it's not that we've, you know, put it together and somehow we made this thing that, because even if whatever you made it from came from the earth, everything that we make with our hands comes from the earth. Even our computers and our cell phones and all of that. So this is a place for us to stand in the remembering and go back and look at these old stories and to ask the questions as you start working with this wisdom, ask the questions, what has been lost to us because the teachings have been taken and interpreted through the lens, a male-dominant culture that has a lens that's very distorted in the way that it speaks about these things. And so part of that returning to the wisdom of the cycles and the seasons is the returning to the wisdom of the earth. And the earth is our home, and the earth is that which gives us everything. All that we have, all that we need is here. It's a closed system in its own way. And that if we forget that, we forget these principles and teachings, then we have a culture, a society, a whole generation of people that think it's okay to destroy it. Mm-hmm. To forget about the fact that everything comes from the mother, and that we can't undo these things on the earth if we don't begin to shift the way that we view where life comes from. And to me, that's also this like wisdom, real deep ancient wisdom of the East. Anybody have any questions? Comments? Make notes. I don't care. Sun is an object. The sun is an object, and light is an experience. I don't know why I wrote that, but anyway. So let's now go to the. I also wanted to share something with you that I just read a little article this weekend from a newspaper out on the coast, and they had been kind of focusing on North tradition. and the author made a comment that we must, we can no longer afford to avoid or discredit reconnecting and studying these old teachings from Northern Europe, and doing so because they are so connected to race, you know, white supremacist racism. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't do it and find our way back to the wisdom that's older than that, and the wisdom that worked for people that lived for tens of thousands of years in the cold, then we have left it to the white supremacists mm-hmm. and to the neo-Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's being seen, and that's how it's being presented, and that's how it's being misused. And we can't change, we can't expect that the overall attitude or perception of this wisdom, we can't expect it to be any different if we're not willing to take it and go back farther and to be willing to stand up and speak about it and to claim it as our own heritage and to claim it as an indigenous heritage and to claim it as something that's part of our own culture and our own ancestral memory. Because if we don't, then it's a perpetuation of the thing that we get accused of.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you start to talk about some of these teachings, that's very often what you'll be, you know, accused or attacked about, the fact that it's not okay to claim a heritage because of all the horrible things that, you know, were perpetuated. Well, we're not trying to ignore that, yes, there's a perpetuation of that, but that's not what it was originally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the Crusaders can just like, oh, Crusades didn't happen. We didn't kill all those people.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
We can teach about Christianity. It's not okay to talk about this. And also, when you start working with this old earth wisdom, yes, move it for it closer.
No, don't.
I lost my thought. I'll eat some more popcorn. When we talk about these ancient earth teachings, then we can find our way back to that peace that's been missing, the peace of the indigenous earth wisdom that comes from the part of this part of the world, the northern part of the world, and then find our way to live with it as it is woven together with all these other things. But if we're not willing to take a stand and speak about it or claim it, then, you know, what, I don't know what, right? Because I say that to everyone that I teach, is that our ancestors are asking us for something now. And people are coming forward and wanting to learn more, but a lot of what I get, like the presentations in Utah, are these young men, you know, that are kind of like what you see here with the Thor's hammer and the tattoos and the bald heads and, you know, Odin, and, you know, one guy calls himself so-and-so Odin's son, and it's like, well, that's lovely, but, you know, you're Odin's son, do you know your mom's name? No. Well, shame on you. Remember, she opened up her legs and you came out. You know what I mean? Right. But is
isn't done the East yet, so.
He hasn't done the East yet. We start him there. Open your eyes. But that's also what I believe is really important. It's not that you have to become a rune reader or that that's going to be your whole life, but why wouldn't we want to learn more and more and begin to weave it back into the web, darn the socks, because there's huge holes, huge holes in this.
Well, and for so many of those young people, they're watching the Viking show and they're watching this and DC Comics and all that other junk. And they really aren't eating all the pieces, and yet they know that there's something that's missing, I think.
Yeah. But usually, you know, that's the place where I can say, as an elder, I don't want to, you know, I'm not the oldest of the old, but as an elder, I think as you get into your 70s and 80s, that's fine. We have to take these boys and slap them.
Yeah.
It's like...
I mean, and I don't... Yeah. Not disrespectful, but to stand in the presence, because they don't, a lot of them don't have the wisdom of the mother in their lives. They weren't raised with it. And so then what are we doing if we can't stand, not to, in a confrontational way, because that rarely is a confrontation. I've never said that to a young man and and said, you know, do you know, well, if you're Odin's son or you're Thor's whatever, who's your grandma? What's the name of your mom? You're telling me you don't know your mother's name? Shame on you. And I've never had anybody accuse me of attacking them or threatening them. They often will actually stand there embarrassed, literally embarrassed. And I can do that. You know, I've got two sons. I've got one that's 6'6" and one that's 6'4", and they're big guys. And I'm, you know, it's like, what do you mean you don't know your mom's name? And so this is also where we can take some of this, and it, as you live it in your life, you work it into your life, and you then begin to speak the language of it, and you take the principles, because these are very different. This is not a spirituality that is in your head. It is not a thinking up spirituality. It's how do you live? And it's not a high vibration spirituality, and it's not a white light spirituality, and it isn't a spirituality that's just about the mother, the great lactating mother in the sky. It's about mothers that eat their young. It's about death and life in balance, and light and dark in balance. And there's very few places that you can visit on the spiritual spectrum right now where you can have these kinds of conversations. And it's sickening, the stuff that comes across on the internet, and all, one more group formed, and one more, you know, higher consciousness, and living into the high vibration, and everything's purple, and, you know, and lovely, but it's out of, I hate purple. It's out of balance. I don't vibrate there. But that's also what I feel is happening in the East for us as we use that. What's emerging? Mm-hmm. What's coming forth? What's coming out of the ice right now? Mm-hmm. The ice is melting. What's coming out of the ice? And if you dig around a little bit, you begin to find that there are lots of things that are coming out that they don't even want to talk about, because it's making everybody change what they believe, or what they thought that was true, or what they've been told or fed, because you know, the National Geographic Society had to fit it into the echelon of the white male dominant culture. You know, that, and it doesn't fit anymore. So that's also what we're dealing with. What's emerging right now? We live in a really interesting time, and stop focusing on how bad everything is, because I think that's just the decoy to get us to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps you in line if you're looking at the bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and buying the light bulbs that you can't, that are so toxic that you can't get rid of them. Mm-hmm. It's like, who sold us on that idea?
Right. Well, that's a good one. Yeah, I do.
Light bulbs that, you know, like if they break, and then they're toxic,
there's,
and you have to air your house out.
Fluorescent light bulbs, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, right. You can't throw them out. You have to take them to recycle, but you have to go to the toxic recycle, which is only on Sunday in Vancouver.
If I work in a factory, I only have to manage it as hazardous waste.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
So, but we buy it. We buy into
it. No, I poured it incandescence. If anybody wants incandescence, I have a stockpile.
I have a hoarded.
Because I refused to.
Yeah.
I didn't know the LEDs were going to come out, so I was like, I'm
not. But even though it's the spectrum we're missing, we're, don't get, I better not start talking about this. Okay.
Well, I think it's too, the more complicated things get, the more people buy in. The simpler it is, it's old and therefore can't be right. That isn't good.
Yeah. Well, and then it's a consumerism thing.
Right.
We have to, everybody has to replace something.
Right.
And then we all need something new. It's like the ridiculousness of car seats expiring.
Oh, yeah. Thank God I didn't have to have car seats. My kids are four.
When my daughter started this whole thing about, well, the car seat's past its expiration date. But it's like 2 years old. It expired? Yeah, yeah, you know. And they got you buying into this whole thing about you can't use that car seat because it expired.
Wow.
And then you can't sell it to anybody because it's
like
expired.
Too, right? Like you can't, like you can't clean it and then give it to somebody else to use. You have to have, oh yeah. That's like a big deal.
Well, just use quart jars. They were just as good. That was a lot cheaper.
No, but I mean, you just
find the hand-me-down. I was fine with it.
Like, you think about that. You know, it's like, well, was it in an accident? You know, if somebody who's been in an accident and the baby died, they're probably not selling their car seat, right? Let me just tell you.
Yeah, but even if they're in a slide accident and the baby doesn't get injured, you're not supposed to use a car seat anymore because it's damaged somehow.
But I know, but, you know.
Well, think about cell phones, right?
Mm.
The like perpetual needing a new one.
Yeah.
The minute you have one that's supposedly up to date and the newest thing, you know, 2 months later there's something better and you're
even just the updates. it's all leasing now. We're not buying things.
Crazy.
We're leasing things to own it in the future.
Yeah, I know. They're doing that now.
Yeah.
Interesting. We're doomed.
But there's, I don't know if you've heard about Stella McCartney. She's a dress designer, and she's doing something about using recycled fabric because she's kind of got together with somebody else that's really getting very frightened by all the extra fabric that's everywhere, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
well, actually, though, I've seen there's some places, it's India, I believe, that gets all of will buy the clothes from us, shreds it into yarn, and then sells it back to us as yarn.
That's awesome.
It's kind of like they're logging timber in Northern California. They closed all the sawmills down. They put it on a ship, send it to Japan, have it milled there, and then send it back to us to use it. Now somebody got something wrong there.
Right.
Well, they wanted to sell the chickens to China to bring back to us.
So we're going to talk about the East and the rising of the sun. So, just like I asked the question before about the setting sun, the question is, when was the last time that you got up in the morning with the intention of watching the sunrise?
I'm a sunrise junkie, so I do that. Excellent. I like it. I'm an early riser, and I will just sit there and watch the sun.
Watch the sun come up.
Is it August? I intentionally watched the sun come up in August.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, really early then.
All of a sudden was the word. All I heard was August, and I was like, "Well,
no, I got it." I was like, "Yep, that's about the right time to do that."
In August, it comes up. It's cold outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different sunrise in the
cold.
Yeah.
But I went camping for the eclipse, and I remember getting up very early watching the sun come up, and it was awesome.
It is awesome. And so that would be another suggestion for homework for any of you. I know where we live it's a challenge because of the weather sometimes, but to set an intention to have the experience of the sun. The sun in the northern tradition is female, Suna.
I didn't know that.
She's Suna. S-U-N-N-A.
S-U-N-N-A.
Mm-hmm. So it would make sense that a people from the north who have long, dark, cold winters would have the sun return, and she's bringing new life and new warmth and growth. And then there's the story, you know, in fact there was just a posting of a little video on the internet of the old stories of the white reindeer goddess who carries the sun in her antlers and brings the sun back. They celebrate the sun coming back at winter solstice in the antlers of the reindeer goddess, which this is another piece historically that people don't recognize or have forgotten, is that the males lose their antlers after the rut. The females wear them all through the winter until they calve in the spring, and that they worshipped the reindeer as she who led the herd the matriarch leads the herd to where it's safe to breed and where it's safe to give birth. And of course she would lead them with the sun.
Tina did put something on Facebook about this.
Yes, in the antlers, at this winter solstice, bringing the sun back. And that is doesn't take, you know, rocket science to put those little pieces together to realize, oh, that's where we got reindeer with the birth of the sun in the winter with evergreen trees. It has nothing to do with the desert. Oh, isn't that interesting?
And that Rudolph thus was a female.
All the reindeers were female.
Well, but I mean, it's a.
And then perhaps.
Common and Blitzen, those aren't necessarily male or female names.
But the interesting part of that is very possibly that Rudolph's red nose had to do with the rising of the sun coming back.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another place where we can, like, look at the sun. If we look at her as female, we know that she disappears. Sometimes she's gone longer than other times. Sometimes she's away for quite a while. But wouldn't we pay attention to when she was going to come back? Wouldn't we watch for the signs? And wouldn't we also be humble enough to recognize that it's possible that she wouldn't come back? We believe that it's always going to return because we know scientifically, la 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 la. But what if the sun didn't return because nobody was there to sing her up? Nobody was there to do the ritual. Nobody was there to welcome her.
Like for the solstice, so I just saw that social media thing going around about the deer mother of that's out or whatever. And so for the solstice, I was thinking, I don't know why I'm bringing this up. I don't need permission or anything, but like you could like build an altar to the female reindeer and ask her to bring back the sun. And we're going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it. And my daughter has a fascination with reindeer.
Yeah, so and do I.
But it's because there's this little kid's book called, The Christmas Wish, and it's a beautiful book.
Oh,
and it's,
yeah, I know that.
Yeah, the little girl with Anya. And she finds a baby reindeer. And of course she names him Odin, right? But.
Of course.
I know. And, you know, Santa gets tied into there at some point. But my daughter is like, she wants to know about reindeer and who loses their antlers and like all that. So anyway, this is.
You perfect. Can change it to it's Odina.
Just, yeah. Or Suna, for that matter.
Or Suna. Or Suna.
Yeah. So this is just really exciting.
Good.
And yeah, because.
The sun comes back.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting because Suna is, of course, female, but so is the moon. in Northern tradition. Mm. There's no real male involved.
Well, he is called, in some of the stories, he's called Mani, and they say the moon is a male. I don't believe that either. I believe that they had the triple again. The earth was female, the sun was female, the moon was female.
Right.
Which would take us back to that. I mean, that's Lawrence. Over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
This triple, this becoming, constantly ending and becoming. And then the overlay of, you know, what I call Laddio, Daddio, and the spook, you know. I'm from the 50s. Right? I mean, it's like, what is that about? The father, the son. What was that Irish priest that was saying that he was like a teenager before he realized that it wasn't what they said at somebody's burial? He thought it was in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, and into the Holy Ghost. These things have nothing to do. I have to always tell jokes, but you have to laugh. Can you? Kids hear that, right?
Oh, yeah. Where did you get the Laddio Daddio on the spook?
Well,
I've never heard that. But it's the steward.
Well, Daddio would be fine.
Well, Daddio
is
the father.
I understand what it is.
Well, it came out of the 50s during the beatnik. This was Laddio, you know, Daddio.
Oh, okay.
That was from the beatniks.
And Laddio, of course, would be fine.
And so that's kind of, that's a beatnik kind of expression that you would use. That's
awesome.
Isn't that a great way to describe it?
Wonderful.
Because what, you know, we also have, until we're willing to be disrespectful and irreverent, and that's why I call myself that, is to be irreverent about some of this stuff and call it the myth. Just like we've been labeled pagan, heathen, those are names, those are horrible words that were used to describe the folk, the people, because they're derogatory. It's like barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
It's derogatory in its own way. Now, we embrace it because it's a way to distinguish ourselves from the Christians, but it wasn't our word. It's always, we describe ourselves in relationship to Christianity when we use those words. Always. They're the measure, and we have to compare ourselves. Either we are that, we are them, or we're not them. So that's another way for us to stop referring to ourselves in relationship to that benchmark. Like when somebody says Newgrange is like the pyramids of the North, it's like, well, no, because
the pyramids are like the Newgrange of the
South.
Of
the South, yes. Change the way you speak about these things. Look for opportunities to stop comparing everything to classical Greece, or bringing those beings into our culture. It's like, that just makes my hair on fire. I'm a Dianic witch from the British Isles. It's like, well, what is Diana doing up there?
Yeah.
She doesn't belong up there. Why don't you pick one of your own goddesses?
Yeah.
She has nothing to do with the British Isles. She was brought in by the conquerors. And until you start
analyzing it,
being irreverent and breaking some of it apart, we just keep saying the same old stuff to each other.
Right.
Well, Namaste.
And people are reaching for things because they don't have anything.
Right.
And so they're just trying to find, like, threads and...
Yes. And that's beautiful, because that's the opening. But once you start shifting, then speak about it differently. Don't become part of the parroting.
Right.
Make up your own word, even. Yeah. Like we made up the word at the kith and kin, hool. You know, whenever we drink hool, what does that mean? Haglas urus lagus. That's what it means. Oh, that's really important. I met a man the other day who said he taught classes for the a union, like Carpenters Union or whatever, and he would always write his name on the board, and he would say HSDO would be the initials he put behind his name.
Mm-hmm.
so-and-so, HSEO. And he said, nobody had ever asked me. And finally one student said, well, what does that mean? And he says, it means a high school dropout. Because we'll believe it, right?
It's got letters.
All those letters. Because we give credit if we've gone to something academic. Makes us more important.
That certificate.
Makes us more qualified.
More qualified, certainly. Well, if you came here for a college graduate teaching, I didn't drop out of high school, but that was all I did, go to high school. So I want you to practice getting up, watching the sunrise. And not taking it.
That's difficult for me because I'm in all those trees. You actually don't see the sunrise until it's above the trees. It's already risen.
So that might mean that you'd have to get in your car and go someplace with the intention of greeting the sun. And so perhaps they didn't do it every day. However, I do believe that they would have had ritual where they paid attention to the rising of the sun. Let's say if we're back in the north and we are at winter solstice, then they would have marked that sunrise because it would be the turning of the wheel and the days would get longer. And that solstice was that, which literally means this sun is standing still in that particular day.
Well, and you could catch a solstice even where I'm at because the day would be longer. Just would not see the sun as it till it flopped up.
Mm-hmm. But you, I don't think that they all had access to the same site, and that's maybe there were pilgrimages, maybe there were gatherings, and there that's. One proposed concept about like a place like Stonehenge, that there would have been great gatherings of people and once a year that would have gone to a place to actually have the experience because it was so important to them that they participated in the return of the sun because their life depended upon it. And that's what they think that they're looking at up in the Orkneys now with some of the new archaeological discoveries that they're finding up there that are so old that there's evidence that they were huge gatherings of people because there's all the bones of, you know, thousands and thousands of animals that were killed, and it was like a place of feasting. And we know they had to know when these things happened. And they certainly didn't look it up on the internet, and they didn't have, you know, Wee Moon calendar. They were paying attention that it was going to happen at a certain time. So that's also about the stillness, the discernment, the sacrifice. Would you be willing to offer something up to go someplace to have an experience which would be an initiation, for instance. Like watching the sunrise as it goes through the passage at Newgrange and hits the stone at the back on the triple spiral. And, you know, there's like a 20-year waiting list of people who are on the list that they want to go have that experience. So just imagine whoever had built it. That the people would have been a magical experience to have traveled, maybe a couple of years you might have traveled, to get to a place, to have an experience, of the sun shining through a passage onto a triple spiral at only one time, and you hoped that it wasn't raining, because you had to go back again, right? And that's also I would sense. Gives understanding to how so many of the graves that we're finding now have these article of clothing from, you know, plaids from Scotland that are found in the steppes of Russia and red-haired people buried and tattooed. I think you know, our ancestors moved around differently at a very slow pace, and they had all the time because it was, where were they going? There was nothing else to do. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, I have to go and come back for my job. And if it was part of your life that you went someplace to have an experience and to gather together, it wouldn't matter how long it took you to get there. Because what you needed was with you, and then you either went home or you didn't.
There again, it's that simplicity of life, which we have no idea of what simplicity is.
No. So, but we can recreate in our own way by saying, okay, I'm going to get up on that morning, drive my car someplace, drive my, you know, walk to the top of Mount Tabor, and watch the sun come up.
Go sit on the author's stone, the R stone edge.
Yeah. Do that. So, the other part that I mention here is that when the sun, right before the sunrise, just as it is also at the time of sunset, the air changes. And there's, poems written about the breeze at dawn. The breeze at dawn. Because there will be, as that heat comes, even if we're in the winter, it heats enough that the air begins to move, and there will be a change in the air movement back to the winds, and there will be a change in the energy, like a static, the electrical field changes because the air is moving, and you can, even if it's not warmed up necessarily, you will perceive the warmth on a visceral level of there's something has happened here that's different. And that we're not paying enough attention. That's, we're sensual beings. We experience life through all of our senses. And if we don't, when we just live in our heads, then we miss information that would tell us what we need to know. And maybe sometimes, I always wonder, this is kind of off also, but about, we know a lot about people by their smell. Mm-hmm. And that's the most primal sense that we have, is the sense of smell. We don't smell each other anymore because we're so sanitized. Mm-hmm. That's one thing, but on top of that, we're perfumed. Mm-hmm. Everybody has perfumed laundry soap and perfumed dryer sheets and what is that about? It's like, oh, it's
awful.
And then all the products that are perfumed. So it's not just even the clean body smell, because we could pick that up a little bit, but we can't smell each other. So so now we're meeting people, and the most primal sense that we have, the ability to identify and read them, because we're not sniffing butts, right? Like the dogs. I don't know who you are because I can't smell you. And you're giving off some kind of smell that isn't consistent with something I'm feeling or something I'm picking up. And then we try and second guess, and we're distanced from each other. And is that also part of the problem that some of us, we experience with the sense of we can't identify each other anymore? Because we're standardized, and I'm not advocating don't bathe. But pay more attention to how often it is that it's like we can't find each other.
I had someone, a teacher of mine, talk about that, and she said that like perfumes and stuff was an artificial boundary, is what she said.
That's a good way to put it.
It's
an artificial boundary.
Mm-hmm. Dryer sheets definitely are.
Well, just like think about, going on a date and having that other person have drenched themselves and whatever, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that would be a turnoff.
Yeah.
So, I also have a point here about if the sun is a being, so we're not just, if everything is alive, everything is a being, so if the sun is a being, we would want to thank her for coming back. And we might ask her where she went. And the only way that we would know where she goes would be if we went where she went, which would it be disappear in death into the earth or into the water. So if you commune with your ancestors, you can ask them, where does the sun go when she disappears at night? And they could tell you something that you don't know because they've gone there too. That would also be why when we turn in the west that we would want to connect with the ancestors, is because they could tell us where, what happens, where did she go, so that when we face the east and we thank her for coming back, we can also acknowledge the fact that we have a knowing because our ancestors have been there with her. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, our logic, scientific minds are going, oh, no, no, blah, 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 blah. But this is not, this is about the mystery. This is about going into the dark because that's where they go. That's where you'll go. That's where the sun goes. That's where the stars go, is going into the dark. And what's the wisdom that's held in the dark that emerges again in when the sun returns, when the light returns, and when it when the seed sprouts and when the baby's born, they're being born out of the dark. They're being born, brought forth from the place where we all go. And when we get birthed, we are birthed in the form of who we are. So the acorn doesn't matter if the oak tree put itself into the acorn, so when the acorn sprouted, the oak returned. That's the same thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So when something emerges, the imprint is already there, which then takes us back to the teaching of Yira, that what you plant is what's going to grow, because that's part of this wisdom. You can't expect a birch tree to come out of an acorn. And that's, you know, a tree is a tree is a tree, but it isn't. And that's also for people. We are all people. We all depend on the same things. And we're different. Mm-hmm. We're different from each other. And thank goodness for that, right?
I do have one. If we have Suna is sun and Yard is earth, what is our moon state one name?
Mani. That's the only record we have. M-A-N-I.
I thought you said that was male.
Well, that's the name in the Norse. That's they say in the Norse tradition. I don't. I think Mani could be either, but I just don't buy that. That it's a brother. I don't buy it. And I'm the expert. You can decide whatever you want. I don't buy it. So, little children, you know, if you think about little children, they still believe in the mystery, because don't little kids ask you where the sun goes at night? Mm-hmm. And if you give them some big scientific explanation, you know, la la la. What's, Mama, what's the soul? And you're going through the whole thing, and then they just like, but I thought it was the bottom of your shoe. Where are you from? Where does the sun go? I did that already. Oh, I wanted, there's so much here too. Longing. And look up the word nostalgia. You know, there's a difference between, what's the difference between nostalgia and homesickness?
Nostalgia is about a sense of the past. Mm-hmm. Something to do with, there was a really cool animation about it.
Longing for the past.
Yeah.
But it's not like tied to the home necessarily, I don't think.
Right, it isn't. Mm-hmm. And it also, we can be nostalgic for something that we've never experienced.
Yes.
But we remember it, even though we've never had it. Homesickness usually thinks, oh, it's something about home, but we can also be homesick for a place we've never been. Mm-hmm. Right? So the direction of the east can also connect us to the sense of longing and nostalgia, because it connects us to the something that is missing, something that is emerging. We have a sense it's there. We know it's possible to connect with it. We know it's coming back. So there's a return in, there's a return concept in longing and nostalgia, a returning to something that has been, even if we haven't experienced it, but we remember it. So longings then also can be connected to creative desires, because it's out of our longing, which is our remembering, that we will create something to satisfy that desire. The thing that we miss, we will also create from that place. So if we have a longing for, let's say, coziness in our home, you know, winter time, we might dim our lights, we may bring more candles in, we may bring soft fur in, that we may be longing for a feeling, and so we will create something to recreate a feeling, even if we've never had it as an experience in our lifetime. We remember what it's like to have that experience. So there's a quote I put from Henry David Thoreau that says that many times our longings come from the creative desires that are initiated from remorse that we're not living up to our potential. Isn't that interesting?
Ouch.
Ouch, yes. Ouch. We do not commonly live our life out and full. We do not fill all our pores with our blood. We do not inspire and expire fully and entirely enough. We live but a fraction of our life. And that, to me, is also the potential of the East. So you step into that center and you turn and you face the East and you acknowledge the longings that you have and the desires, because that what you are longing for is also the thing that's missing. And when I put that little sentence on the bottom of some of my flyers and I say, where in your life have you settled for less because you were afraid? Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you miss something. So the East is a great way to turn and address that and ask for something to come up, to emerge, to be brought into form, to into sight. And you could say, you know, here's some of the questions in the notes. Is there a place in your life at this time where you carry the stirrings of remorse because you are not living up to your potential? Is there a place inside you that knows you are not living your dreams? You can turn in the direction of the East on the spirit wheel and work with that. And sometimes it's a place where you're hungry. You know, a lot of us are hungry. Mm-hmm. And we've eaten a lot of junk food. We've gone to a lot of places, watering troughs. But we're hungry. So that's the place also of the East. And then I talked about the winds, because the wind that, you know, there are two runes that are about spoken word, ansus and os, about breath, bringing things into existence. And so possibly the wind that blows in from the East, that starts when the sun begins to return, might be the wind that is the wind that speaks things into existence. And that may also be why it would be a place of longing, is that the wind is bringing, the movement of the air is bringing a remembering to you of the thing that you wish for that you know exists but you have but you don't have right now. So that's it. There you go. There's a lot in here, huh? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even that wind you were saying earlier about just that creativity and bringing forth new things.
Yes.
But also come on that wind.
Yes. Yeah. And so then you'd say, well, where is the east wind blowing from at this time? If it's blowing from the gorge, what does it carry? It carries the memories of volcanic eruption, of great floods that gouged out the gorge, of ancient, I mean, that's a very primal place, isn't it, the gorge? But you know something massive happened there. And then if you go up the gorge far enough, the river turns and goes north, goes up into the Rockies. So does the east wind get information from Kari, the north wind? That comes with, blows down the river from Canada, and then they have something that they talk about, and then the east wind from the gorge tells us something. Stand and ask, you know, are you bringing me memories of what has been? Are you a returning wind? That's also different way of being with the wind. So I will end. We will see hopefully everyone next week. That's the fifth class. We'll talk about the South, and I'll by then have some dates and particulars up and ready for the moon class.
And I'll get those to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't believe we've already done four.